Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Dar, I want to read to the audience a little bit of background about you real quick.
Sure.
Okay. This is Dar Ra. He's a music writer, producer, author who earned his stripes with hits of for EMI and 21st Century. One of his tracks, Haunted Dance Hall, which I like, was featured in a Hollywood film starring Hilary Duff and the movie Snakes on a Plane. Dar Ra played on BBC Radio Cambridge to a million people live when they connected their regional stations around the Midlands. Various EPs, Now Is Now, Live for Love, Ceasefire, and soundtracks to film documentaries, City of Hope, have also had millions of streams and lead to the recent album. One of the recent albums, New Kind of Normal, the rock and roll tour de force that has seen three singles. Really makes a movement happens in America with well-received music videos for Rocksteady and Night Stepper being shot in New York City, while Diamonds in the Shadows being shot in Atlanta. With two EPs out, Stand Up for the Heroes, a tribute to the key workers who have stood up to the task of the pandemic, and the Whiskey and Honey EP, this work continues to shape Dar Ra's musical catalog. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome up-and-coming star Dar Ra to Interviewing the Legends. Hello there, Dar Ra.
How we doing? Are we all good?
We're doing real good, man. I love your name.
Cool. Yeah, so I think my mum did too. You know, that's why she was kind of looking for something original to go with, and Dara sort of was kicking definitely sort of around the cortex at the time. So yeah, that's I mean, basically it's an Irish name with sort of, you know, Irish, good Irish Catholic family there, and you know, she was looking for something kind of original, looking through mythology, and my brother was called Fionn, and she named me Dara after a very sort of kind of a robust bishop. Around, I think it was in the 1800s. He was quite a character in sort of Dublin. So, yeah. So Dara was it was the moniker. But you know, growing up in England, you know, having names that were sort of like slightly kind of different to, you know, the run of the mill kind of, well, not run of the mill, but the Johns and the, you know, the Peters and the Davids. You know, when you had a name kind of like was slightly different, people struggled with it. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you've got all sorts of different things, you know what I mean? Like over the years. And so, yeah, I kind of got to that point where I thought, I think I'll make it really easy for people. So I'll do this little funky abbreviation, which is what you got there, Dara. But the actual proper Irish spelling is D-A-R-R-A-G-H. There's a har on the end there, you know? And, but yeah, so I everything kind of gets kind of like sanded down a little bit, doesn't it, for sort of consumption. So, you know, why should I be any different?
Yeah, when you see the Dar.Ra, it almost reminds you of a .com company, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going, Dar.Ra. Is there a
.com after? It just was one of those things. I kind of woke up and it's just like, I just kind of saw it and I thought, you know, that could work. You know what I mean? I was looking for it was around about 2007, 2008. And I was just about to put out my first solo album, which is called Soul Hours, which mm-hmm. a couple of the tracks that you referred to, Haunted Dance Hall was on there. And, And I had done a lot of different things with different record labels under different names. And I just thought, you know, and I was getting a lot of advice saying, look, just put it out under your own thing in your own steam. And I thought, yeah, you know, it's that kind of confidence to kind of do it. And then, yeah, as I say, I just came up with that name and just thought, you know, that abbreviation, and boom, you know, put the album out, and the rest is kind of history. You know, people have picked up on it, and it's easy for people to sort of pronounce and this, that, and the other. So away we go, my friend, away we go.
Well, let me tell you, man, you're a great artist. Okay. I've interviewed a lot of people, and it's refreshing to see somebody out there new, you know, that knows what they're doing, and is a musician and a great songwriter. And you're also very different. You don't, you got your own style, but you're also eclectic. You don't play the same thing, the same style over and over again. You go, I've heard some R&B, you know, I've heard some, you know, some pure rock. I mean, you're awesome. You are. And I want to thank Doug Newsom for, you know, turning me on to your music. Thank you, Doug, wherever you are.
You know, thank you both, and thank you for the sort of the accolades. And I mean, I know that you've interviewed some serious names, and you know, Manfred Mann was one of them that I sort of noticed that you'd had a go. And I, you know, I thought that's interesting, because we recorded when I was signed to EMI. They put us in Manfred Mann's studio down. It's near the Elephant and Castle, the Old Kent Road. And we met him, and he was just the coolest guy. Yeah. He let us play the Hammond that he did Do a Diddy on, and all those big kind of mid 60s classics we did. And yeah, we had a band at the time on Chrysalis EMI called Taste of Paradise. It was kind of like, you know, the kind of Paradise garagey kind of sound. And there we were, sort of like, you know, hanging out with him, and of course we kind of, every time he come in the studio, we do the classic "There She Goes" just to walking down the street, and it's like, you know, and he just kind of, obviously he'd heard it a billion times, you know what I mean, people doing that, and but still smiled and was still very courteous to us, you know, young 20-year-old kids coming in, you know, and working in a really, really fine studio where he had done, you know, Blinded by the Lights and all those big tunes, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it was a lovely, lovely time to be there working in that environment on a massive SSL desk. And as I say, sort of working with some really cool guys. You know, we had, I was really lucky, I was also on those sessions to work with a guy called Tom Fredericks from Chicago, who at the time was just one of the best engineers in London. You know, he was like, it was like, you know, watching him over, like working on an SSL desk, you know, was like watching a pilot flying a super fortress. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? He was just all over it, man. Do you know what I'm saying? And you know, when you come in the studio for the first time and you're in a sort of a, you know, a big kind of a Neve or an SSL kind of room, it's very impressive. I mean, it's very impressive. It's very overwhelming. I mean, now we work digitally, and you know, we can find a way around it, and I can find my way around a desk. But you know, you put yourself in front of an SSL, you know, and you're on, you know, it was like there were 3,000, 4,000 pounds a day kind of studio. So you've really got to know your way around that and not pause for a second and feel overwhelmed. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh,
just
I
like
do.
Coming back from a bombing raid from Germany or whatever, you know, Stephen Fortress, you got to know how to fly that thing. Do you know what I'm
That's
saying?
Right.
Back to base. And Tom Fredericks was just incredible. So I was lucky at an early age to work alongside some really cool people who kind of taught me how to kind of conduct yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I know you're a big fan of the Beatles. I watched a YouTube video that you did tracing their steps, you know, back in Liverpool. Besides the Beatles, who were some of your influences growing up?
The classic kind of American soul music of the 60s, I'd say, was there, you know, Otis, definitely, you know, the Stax sound, some Motown kind of bits and pieces. You know, I love the British rock and roll sound of the sort of, again, the 60s, mid 60s, the Small Faces, Stevie Marriott, you know, the Kinks. And then obviously sort of like, you know, all the kind of classic Hendrix and, you know, Led Zeppelins and all the rest of it from that point. But then, you know, as things kind of moved on, there was, you know, people like Paul Weller, who's a British kind of icon. Mm-hmm. A lot of the punk thing was really kind of, you know, quite big when, you know, I was at school. And, you know, so, you know, a smorgasbord of American and British kind of classic music, really, to be fair. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, you know, I love that mid 60s bird sound, the jingle, kind of like the Rickham 12 string Rickenbacker thing, you know, the Doors, you know, all those kind of people that, you know, they set the bar so high, you know, and, you know, you could only sort of like wish to kind of get anywhere close to that. And I think, you know, when we got signed to EMI Chrysalis, like a lot of those big names were there, you know, like Debbie Harry, Blondie, The Specials, Elvis Costello, all those big names were sort of on that label. So it was almost kind of like, you know, having been a kid growing up buying and listening to those records, to then be walking up the stairs seeing those kind of platinum discs on the wall was a very kind of like inspiring kind of period of time.
Did you know any of the bands from Ireland, like the Cranberries or anybody like that?
No, because again, sort of like we came over in the height of the Troubles in the 70s. And it's a bit of a story. My father was Irish, but he was brought up in England because his father was a doctor. Right. And he came to London in the sort of war. And he was a bacteriologist, which is really interesting because he actually came up with a vaccine for the flu.
Really?
He was given a posthumous award by the king at the time, you know, given the freemen of the city of London with the big sword and all the rest of it, because it was a big deal, you know. And he had a practice in a place called Harley Street, which is now sort of like known for sort of, you know, one of the kind of, you know, place, one of the biggest doctor GP kind of like, you know, medical areas in England, you know. Harley Street is the place. So he had a practice there, and like I say, he was working as a bacteriologist during the war, came up with a flu vaccine. So quite ironic, we're in the middle of another pandemic with another vaccine kind of like being touted about, as it were. So but the thing is, the core of the question answer is that because my grandfather came over to England, he sort of educated my father here. Mm-hmm. So when he went back to Ireland, he had an English accent, which just in the sort of 70s just did not, or in the 60s, 70s, it was just not going to go down that well. Doesn't matter how Irish you are, when the country is kind of technically at war with England and you go back kind of with an accent that they it doesn't matter to them, unfortunately. And it broke my dad's heart because he had to leave. Yeah, he went back to Ireland to run the farm, and then he had to leave Ireland, and it broke his heart really but it was safer. My mum was kind of felt it was safer to come to England, and England's always been good to us. England's always been a safe bet for us. Always been a safe country where we can express ourselves. And I've got nothing but good things to say about England, because, you know, and I know that's going to upset a lot of Irish people in the world, if you understand, but like, you know, I can't, you can only see as you find, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
It's like, you know, there's going to be great Americans. There's going to be sort of not so great Americans. There's going to be great English. There's going to be great Irish, not so great. And I just think that when we paint these whole brushes of generalization about a race of people, it's a very dangerous thing to do. Do you know what I mean? So I love the Irish. I've got, you know, and I love Ireland, and I love the culture, and I love the humor, and I love the way that they are, you know, very kind of, they see as they find, and they kind of, they bounce a little bit. They're very bouncy type, you know, vibes, you know, it's that Celtic thing. Do you know what I mean? And, but then there's things about England that, again, sort of like, you know, I've grown up here. I've got a lot of English friends. And as I say, like we've just mentioned, how many English bands did I mention that had been a massive influence? Yep. So I can, again, it's like you've got to take the best and leave the rest. And I think people get hung up today about past and divisions. Things happened back in the day when the Battle of the Boyne, you know, and all that, you know, and they're still fighting the Battle of the Boyne in 16, whenever. And it's like, you know, it's like we have, you know, the past is important. Of course it is. Without the past, we don't know our present. But if we keep holding on to these torches or these big, huge weights that we carry, you know, we're not going to allow ourselves to move on. And that's, you know, as I say, it's about love, man, at the end of the day. It's about loving the good things and working on the bad things. You get me?
I get you. And the only thing that's going to give us all peace around the world is music.
I think you know, I think art has always been sort of like something that can bring us together. You know, I think music is kind of one of those kind of things within that pantheon. But you know, somebody can produce a piece of art, and we can all connect into it. Leonardo da Vinci can produce a piece of art that somebody can relate to in Indonesia, you know, and be inspired by. You know, and I think we're living in an amazing period of time. I know there's a lot of challenges, but the fact that we're all communicating in the way that we are, we're in a global village now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's made things a lot easier in some ways to kind of to work. You know what I'm saying? You know, like I run my label on my own, but I'm able to farm things out right across the world. So I've got literally, I've got an artist in Indonesia that's been making the last two covers. He did Rise Like the Sun.
Yep.
You know, picks up on a brief, real cool, real quick. I've spent time in Indo, so I kind of know what they're like. They're really deep thinking, kind of like very artistically kind of minded people. And so, you know, the internet has allowed me to not have to fly to Bali to talk to him. You know, I'm talking to him every day about, you know, the same goes for, I've got a mastering engineer, a young cat in Italy, who is just supreme. You know, I mean, he's just done the last two projects, which is a company. You know, like most engineers, if I sent them stuff that wasn't kind of like that isn't 0.3 dB and you know -3 dB, and it's like, you know, there's plenty of headroom there. Do you know what I mean? They're going to go. Mm-hmm. They're going to send it back and go, what are you doing? I've sent him projects that have been mastered, and I've asked him literally, listen, I know this is a really, I know you don't ask mastering engineers to do this, but I've got all these two track mixes that are lurking about. I don't have the original mixes. Could you swing it so we can get this compilation album together? And he's gone, yeah, no problems, man. And he's come back and he's just
awesome.
Enriched these tracks. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? So now I'm throwing every last little thing that I thought was unreleasable just to see if we've got the master. He's done it again. And I literally, I've got two albums going out, which is all comps from the label. Literally stuff that I've had out from the 90s to now on Majestic Retrospectives 1, which should have been out last week, but it's been delayed. Majestic Retrospectives 2, which should be out later on this month, which probably be delayed, unfortunately. But then I found this project that I did for a film about London, about the Pearly Kings and Queens. So I don't know if you know too much about them, but they were basically sort of like the kind of the people that sold like fruit and veg and stuff in London, sort of like back in the day, you know.
Right.
And they used to sort of decorate their clothes with all these very shiny buttons and stuff. And they'd go out and they sort of like kind of, it was almost like a kind of a, they parade a little bit, do you know what I'm saying? They'd go to the pub and they'd sing and they'd dance and they'd have these amazing glittery clothes on. And I, you know, I was asked to do some music for a film about one of the Pearly Kings of London, which unfortunately didn't actually get released. But I made these tracks and they were great. But yeah, they just sat about for a while, and then I'd lost access to the original kind of cut, and I just had these, you know, these kind of like half mastered tracks, which were great songs, brilliant songs. You're going to love this. I've got somebody doing a video for it at the moment, man. And it's
cool.
It tells the story of London. It's an amazing thing. So it goes all the way back to, you know, this family go back all the way to sort of Roman times.
Oh, wow.
And it tells their story as they've always kind of like, they've fallen in and sort of like for the call of the king or queen. So they fought in every war from like, you know, the kind of campaigns in South Africa to the First World War, the Second World War. And it tells the whole tale of each generation going through their kind of their thing. So it's a six and a half minute piece, you know what I'm saying? Mm. But it was just sitting on my drive and I thought, you know, I listened to it like a little while ago and I thought, that's going to be an interesting one. I'm going to see if this Italian dude will pull it off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not thinking it's going to come back sounding, because I was going for this kind of Small Faces, Sex Pistols kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
With a very sort of almost like, I wouldn't it be nice to get on with my neighbours, you know, that kind of idea. So this dude comes back with the three mixes and they're like, wow, that's amazing. Do you know what I'm saying? Like really incredible. I mean, I did one of the tracks with Dick Behan, who did the Foo Fighters.
Right.
No, you know, like his studio is not far from here because we're not far from like Paul McCartney lives down the road. You know, you got a lot of people kind of like, you got Keith Richards who's got a place. in sort of like not far from here. So Mark Knopfler, I think, is just up the road as well. There's a lot of the Everson, Lake and Palmer had a place up in Heathfield. So it's quite a real, you know, the Beatles manager used to live just literally a stone's throw from here, like Rushford. Wow. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So it's kind of like it's got a real kind of rock and roll. A lot of the dudes who made a lot of money in the sort of the 60s all moved down to the country. This is where they got their country pads. So we've been lucky. We've lived down here for 10 years and it's been amazing. It's just farmland, like real quiet. It's changing a little bit now. But so, yeah, so that's the story. So this dude sent this stuff back and it was as good as the guy. It was as good as the 360 did the foods. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, this kid's amazing.
Yeah. Your videos are very cool, by the way. I like the ones, you know, with the rat family.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, again, you see, thing is this, the coming back to this whole global village, you see, I've got a really cool guy called Brendan McGowan in New York who did that. And he did Rocksteady, he did Nightstepper, and he did Diamonds down in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And again, sort of very guerrilla style. You know, there's a storyboard there, but he's literally just hitting the ground and just nailing it. And he's an amazing up and coming, you know, name in New York who's making a lot of very cool things. And yeah, I've been very lucky to kind of do some films with him and sort of push the boat out, you know, and just kind of like with Rocksteady, we wanted this kind of like it was based on the American Werewolf in London, but it was like he returns to New York but he's like a proper vigilante, wants to kind of clean the city up. So that's his deal. But obviously he's living a double life. So, you know, here's the deal, man. Do you know what I mean? With it, I think with the songs that I do, I'm really kind of into making kind of mini little operas with them. Do you know what
sure.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like Brian Wilson kind of idea of these pocket symphonies.
Have you done a concept album? Any of them, would you consider any of them a concept album?
I think New Kind of Normal probably comes close to that. Do you know what I'm saying? Because again, it's a sort of a tale of our times, really. Mm-hmm. And although I haven't done it, you know, in terms of sort of like following a storyline, I think each individual song is a kind of testament to the time. So I think that there's concepts within that album that kind of link, like Heavier Than Rock and Roll was a testament to our boys and girls going out to Afghan and just kind of, you know, questioning why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, being a long way away from home and that when the stuff starts to hit the fans, you know what I mean? And it's all coming in, it starts to get heavier than rock and roll. And it's just about questioning stuff, you know. And then there's Rewind, which follows on from that, which is about losing people too soon. So it's got that kind of flow. Yep. I'd have to tell you the story for you to kind of get it. I'd have to write the backline storyline for it. But within my sort of life, there is a framework of a concept there, yeah.
I want to go over some of your my favorite tracks. But before I mention that, I want to mention Dar, the writer and author. Yeah, sure. You've got two books out, Road Tales, which is about amazing people with life-changing stories that you met while touring the globe. And another one that, I mean, I'm going to buy both of these books.
Nice, I appreciate that. It's great.
Especially The Night That Jimmy Died, which is, what if souls could cross over at the point of life and death? What if your life was preordained and as a result of such a meeting as you were entering into the world? I mean, The Night That Jimmy Died. This is such a cool concept, man. I'm looking forward to buying both of these.
The thing about The Night That Jimmy Died is actually based on an experience. I met a girl that was born in the same hospital on the same night as when Jimmy.
Really? You're kidding me. Wow.
And so it was in Knightsbridge Infirmary.
Uh-huh.
We were sitting just having dinner, all of us sitting. She was telling me a story, and I just thought, wow, that's an amazing concept. What if their souls had crossed over and she can channel the spirit of Jimi Hendrix? And then she goes on to sort of almost finish Jimmy's work, which was actually moving more away from kind of modal kind of like structures into frequencies.
Right.
And susses out that frequencies, because this is now happening. Mm-hmm. Where we're now starting to realize, we're starting to realize just how powerful frequencies are in terms of healing, mm-hmm. healing your body and changing DNA structures. You know what I'm
Definitely.
Saying? Like the monks have known about it for centuries. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I was lucky enough to kind of do an album in Australia with a guy called Orlando Allen. Mm-hmm. And we were working on frequencies. It was an album basically about it was based on the Indian chakra system. And it was the whole premise was like, could you kind of get high without taking drugs?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, let's kind of investigate this. You know what I'm saying? So we did this record with a girl who was doing these kind of workshops, and they were mixing kind of like certain frequencies with breathing exercises and tonal kind of things mixed with this ecstatic kind of dancing. You know, obviously after 8 hours of doing that, man, you're flying, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know, and I'd always been a bit kind of like, you know, a classic kind of rock and roll, you know, I'm not going to lie, you know what, you know, mm-hmm. goes on,
sure.
You know, and so it was a really kind of good wake up for me to go, actually, you know what, you don't need drugs to be creative and you don't need drugs to get high. And so I took that premise of making that record, took us 18 months to make. It was 2001. And so I took that premise and just kind of mixed it with this whole channeling of Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, she goes out to change the world through rock and roll and then ends up changing DNA through frequencies. You know what I'm saying? And there's some amazing scenes that I think would make an incredible film.
I think so.
You know, yeah. there's a scene in there where she becomes like an amazing guitarist as well at the same time. She's like maverick kind of guitar player, and she ends up touring, becomes very big, mm-hmm. tours America, gets to Seattle, and someone takes a shot at her, right? So she's basically in a coma and she's going through the whole thing. But while she's in this coma, Jimmy comes and sort of like takes her to this realm, which can only be sort of like described as a kind of heavenly realm. And within this framework, right, where he takes her, all the greats are there, right? And they're all doing a little set. They're all set up in this massive space where they've all got their bands. So you've got mm-hmm. Buddy Holly with his crew.
Right.
You got the some of the Beatles are kind of hanging out, obviously. Right. They're doing their little routine. You've got, you know, Mitch Mitchell and Jimmy, obviously, doing their thing. She's just sitting there watching because the spotlight just drops on each one. So spotlight is on, like, you know, Brian Jones. He's got a little thing going on. Mm-hmm. Next spotlight is on, you know, Jimmy, John and George, all that. They're all doing this little thing going on. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then sort of like, so you're getting this kind of taste of all these amazing, great kind of artists that have graced the planet. Jimmy's obviously, you know, James Brown, Otis is there. And then they've all done their bit and then everything stops. And then these lights come on and Elvis walks in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And everyone just drops and they're like,
very cool. Elvis.
The king is here. And, you know, and so that, I think, as a scene in a film.
Awesome.
Out there, man. Absolutely out there. Could you imagine all those bands? Like, you know, you could just, you know, Chuck Berry, you know, classic Chuck, kind of classic, you know, all those dudes, Jerry Lee, all the cats. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously, Jerry's still, no, Jerry's just gone, hasn't he? Jerry's gone. Yeah, you could do that. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, just have them and all. Eddie Cochran. Could mm-hmm. you imagine Eddie Cochran doing a routine? You've got all the greats there, do you know what I'm saying? And then, as I say, I think it would make a good little scene for a film, man, do you know what I'm saying? But yeah. And it's kind of telling the tale of actually, you know, about awakening, but not awakening in terms of sort of this kind of new wokedom awakening, but more, you know, awakening to higher realms. You know, like the difference between sort of enlightenment and being awake. Is kind of like wokedom is very kind of like focused on third dimensional things, whereas, like, you know, enlightenment is focused on a very higher way, kind of like, you know, enlightening themselves to actually transcend the third dimension. Do you understand what I'm saying?
It'd be cool if you go way back to all the early blues players too that started it all, like Robert Johnson, Muddy Waters, and all those guys.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you'd have to name check John Lee Hooker and all those.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just saying, you know, in the book, obviously, I've got, you know, I mean, I wrote it 3 years ago. So it's like, obviously, I'm just trying to remember it. But I just remember the way I wrote it when Elvis comes in, man. It's just drop dead, you know what I'm saying? And he just does his kind of 57 routine because he's fresh, you know. And, you know, no one could touch Elvis in 57, 56, 57. No one could touch him, really. You know, if you went, I don't know if Chuck and ever went on stage back to back with Elvis, but I think that would have been a scary prospect to kind of have to follow Elvis. You know what I mean?
I agree.
You know,
the U.S. Of course was very big on the blues when it first came out and evolved into rock and roll. The Brits took the blues that was kind of like, you know, no one cared anymore and brought it back again, you know, with John Mayall and people like that, Savoy Brown, which was, and I give every prog legend credit, because if it wasn't for the Brits, you would not have prog, because prog music is, to me, all English. It's the Brits that created prog rock. So, yeah, you know, everybody gives the Americans a lot of credit, but I give the English a lot of credit as well, you know.
Yeah,
I really do.
I think, you know, England and America has always worked very well together. I think we've always complemented each other. Do you know what I'm saying? Sometimes we get into trouble too much together, I think. Do you know what I'm saying? But I think creatively, we've always had a bit of a, you know, when anything broke here, like the Sex Pistols or the Clash, you know what I mean? It came over to America. America picked up on that, then gave us other things back, you know what I mean? Of course, you know, here's the classic thing, you know, the New York Dolls, of course, you know what I'm saying? And you know, it influences the Clash, the Pistols, and then we come back. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's always been a two-way thing. Like, there's a spark in America, Britain picks up on it, and we kind of vice versa, kind of, you know, expressing each other. You know, George Harrison picks up a 12-string, does a little jingle jangle on if I needed someone on Rubber Soul. You know, the Birds come back with their 12-string. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, exactly.
It's a beautiful combination of kind of things that happen like that. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I think we complement each other really, really well. And it's a special relationship. A lot of people, you know, really value that relationship over here. And I don't know if the Americans really realize that.
Right.
How much British people do value. I mean, I think, of course, you know, there's going to be a core that are critical. But I think if you talk to most English people and they said, you know, do you feel more connected to America than you do kind of like, you know, anywhere else, I'll probably get nailed for this, you know what I mean? But most people would say our default kind of like relationship is with America and with American people.
Yeah, you know, mine's the opposite. It's with the Brits.
Well, yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is, like, America, I just want, you know, Americans, you know, I don't know if they realize how important sort of like you guys are to us. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know,
but well, music wise, you know, it's, you know, you mentioned punk, you know, I go back, I think the Stones and the Who were one of the, you know, first punk bands. If you really look at it, you know?
Yeah, I think they were. But everything influences everything, doesn't it? You know, certainly. Here's the thing about, you know, how things evolve. So, you know, there was that kind of auto-destructive thing that was going on with Townsend sort of mid-65, 66. But that came out of the blue, because like they were playing in Hastings, which is literally a stone's throw from here as well. Mm-hmm. And the venue was so small, you know, they lifted his Rickenbacker up and he put it through the ceiling of this venue and it snapped the neck. And everyone started laughing because they thought it was funny. So obviously him going, he's getting, you know, all fueled up on whatever, decides to smash it to pieces. And then people thought that was part of the show. So that's how those things kind of happen. Sometimes they're not as kind of pre-programmed as you'd like to think. They've come out of the blue and then they've suddenly gone, well, this is interesting. It's an auto-destructive part of the act, which of course becomes, you know, it's a punk thing to do. They take that.
It is a punk thing. They scared the shit out of a lot of audiences. You ever see the Monterey Pop when the Who comes out? Look at the audience after they break their instruments.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God.
I think, you know, there's a weird sort of period of time between sort of 60 in 67 where the mod thing becomes psychedelic. And I think that, you know, bands like The Faces and bands like kind of like, you know, The Who still had that amphetamine fueled kind of aggression in their rock music. Whereas a lot a lot of the kind of the West Coast thing was a lot more,
right,
had been much more immersed in sort of like the whole sort of marijuana kind of culture, which there's two different drugs working. You've got the very cool, chilled, want to listen to some acoustic guitar in, you know, the canyon or whatever, whereas like coming out of like hardcore cities in England, like London and Manchester and Liverpool, there's still that hardcore drinking amphetamine angst, which, like you say, fuels the kind of that part of rock and roll, which when you look at Monterey, they still kind of, although it had happened, like obviously 65, 66, I don't think people were that ready for it when they, could you imagine that you're sitting there and you're like, you know, you're chilled on big fat, you know, whatever, and suddenly somebody starts smashing stuff in front of you, be like, oh dude, what are you doing? It's just that, you know, you
I'm could tripping, imagine. Man.
And then there's that clip of Hendrix where Hendrix goes, watch your ears, I'm gonna come at you, I'm coming, and he plugs that in and off he goes and he's straight into Purple Haze and everyone's going, ah, what is this?
I know, it's great.
You know, they were coming from England, you see, again, Hendrix coming from, although he's American, he's coming out of England,
yeah,
with that amphetamine fueled, you know, energy that people, if they're on a different level, it was always going to be pretty kind of like full on. And I think it was just, it must've been a beautiful time to be around, do you know what I mean? An experience, you know? So yeah, anyone that was in Monterey 67 kind of like was kind of relatively lucky, I think. Cause it, again, you've got that meeting of like the mamas and the papas, right, with that British kind of like,
exactly,
and then you've got the mamas and the papas and all the kind of the, you know, the canyon kind of crew coming out, mixing and merging. And then actually that becomes a very big influence on The Who and all those bands as well, because they're communicating with each other. So it's a two-way kind of conversation every time, you know. You know, hopefully we'll always carry on, that we'll always be constantly cross-referencing each other and checking each other and working, whether it be through music or art or fashion or, you know, whatever else, transcendental kind of new type music that, you know, that will be the future, is music that actually, like going back to the night that Jimmy died, it's music that can really sort of change your perception of kind of where you are. And also kind of like, you know, healing kind of sound, healing music.
Sure.
And I don't mean that in a hippie way. I mean, like, you know, frequencies like 538, 440 hertz, where people are going to be experimenting a lot more with frequencies within their music to create vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That
you'll
subliminally feel it if you're open to it. But that's where music for me needs to go. You know what I'm saying? It's like having those subliminal frequencies in there. So you have the enjoyment of the song that you'll sit back and you'll do whatever you do to music. But underneath it, there's a subliminal kind of vibe that's going on that actually is kind of like, is healing kind of your DNA and changing your cellular structure at the same time. That's where I think music needs to go. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think I like when artists leave the music, the interpretation to the listener, and they don't, you know, classify it as this is exactly what the song is about, because people like to be open-minded and put that song into their beliefs, into their feelings, you know. And I was just talking to Mark Fartner the other day from Grand Funk Railroad, and he was talking about closer to home. You know, he never came out and said what the song was actually about, because that he wants people to interpret it in their own way, you know, and I agree with that 100%.
Of course. I think, you know, why would you bludgeon someone over the head and say it's this way when, you know, it could be another way? And the other thing is, you know, you can learn from other people's experiences. So you know, the classic NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, sort of like says, you know, you should never put your content onto people, because, you know, people have to kind of be free to express themselves in the way they express themselves.
Exactly.
And when you're putting your content on someone else, you're depriving yourself of an experience that you get back. So by saying, oh, it's this, you're depriving somebody of going, well, I thought it was that.
Right.
Now, by you saying, oh, well, I thought it was that, allows me to then go, That's genius.
I didn't think about that.
You see what I'm saying? So exactly. Yeah, leaving things as open as possible and not stamping too much content on where you're at is really important. You know, of course you're going to have your driving kind of story backlines, whether you work like that. See, I'm very much about storylines.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, I'm constantly kind of thinking about what if I, like the last song I just wrote was about, I got this inspiration from watching The Tsar, mm-hmm. The Last Tsar. And it was, you know, it was about sort of the Russian, sort of as just on the brink of the Russian Revolution. Mm. And they copped up so hardcore, the Tsars, do you know what I'm saying? From they had a good sort of 15, 20 years to get it right before what happened. You get what I'm saying?
I do. Like, you
know, they really copped up big time. They weren't listening at all. But what was really interesting about that story was this song's kind of not called, it's called No Time for Tears, but you look at Alexandra, who's hanging out with Rasputin, and she kind of looks like she's the ultimate gold digger. Do you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. while he's off at the front, you know, Nicholas is out at the front, he's trying to hold things together. He's making cock up after cock up, you know what I mean? Like, you know, this, that, and the other. And you think, you know, you just get this impression that sort of Alexandra's just there for the good times. But when they got arrested by the Red Army and they were taken sort of away from Moscow, and, you know, they'd had a period of time where they were in isolation under house arrest. And it must have been terrifying. Must have been, because the whole family's there. You know, they were used to kind of living in a pretty luxurious kind of lifestyle, you know, and they were abandoned. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But here's the kicker, man. The kicker is this, right? Right at the core, right at the end, where the bullets are just about to fly, they reach out for each other, mm-hmm. and they hold each other through this storm of bullets. And so for me, it's like that is the truest expression of love for me. Do you understand what I'm saying? So
sure.
I had this idea just for a track kind of about this, about a love, that a true love that will hold forever. It's not there for just for the good times. It's there when the bullets are coming down. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and excellent.
No Time for Tears is that. I'm kind of constantly looking for ideas, mm-hmm. you know, from all different kind of areas. Do you know what I'm saying? And then I'll take my kind of tip out of that. But yeah, so it's the storylines are really important.
You must be kind of a history buff too. Your knowledge is excellent.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, we started off the interview by saying sort of like, you know, if you don't know your history, then you don't know your present. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And if you don't know your present, then how are you going to create your future? So I think you know, I think it's a dangerous thing when I see sort of people trying to rewrite history right now.
You can't wipe out the history.
You know, it's a very dangerous thing, because if you kind of start saying, you know, this was happening in the 1800s and young kids coming through are going to be impressionable and they're going to go, oh, so that was happening and, oh, they didn't do this. And do you know what I'm saying? And it's a kind mm-hmm. of a complete juxtaposition and between sort of like fact and fiction. I think that it's very dangerous when you know, if you're going to start pulling, you know, with all due respect, if you're going to start pulling statues down, do you know what I'm saying, and hiding things that happened, you're robbing the next generation of learning the mistakes.
I agree with you 100%.
We can't sort of go, because Gone with the Wind has, you know, there was slavery in Gone with the Wind. Slavery was happening. So why kind of like whitewash that like it didn't happen and start cancelling things, when actually there's a lot to be learned from that. We'd never go back to that again, because it is so horrific. It's like, you know, because we've evolved. We're not going to go back to that, because we have evolved. And, you know, sure, there's things that we've got to do to kind of make things in society kind of more conjunct and more fair. And that's the thing. But I think cancelling history is a really dangerous move, you know, like Dr. Seuss getting cancelled. It's like,
that's ridiculous.
You know, come on. You know, it's not going to help us. It's like us saying that World War One and Two didn't happen because the Nazis were involved into. We don't like listening to Nazis, so we're never going to. Adolf Hitler again. It's like, you do that at your peril, because those ideas are dangerous and they will come back, and they will come back because
they will come back.
You know, they happened before and they will happen again. If you don't warn people, a warning from history. You know what I'm saying? And that's my kind of tip. So I do believe in, you know, in kind of talking about historical facts, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I don't know if it's an American thing to change history. It never was. You know, I don't want to be, you know, because I've obviously bigged our relationship up saying, you know, we are default, we love you guys, and we do. But I have noticed, you know, over the years that America is very liberal with the past in terms of sort of what happened. And the British never used to be like that. They were always very much like, historical accuracy has to be paramount. Do you know what I mean? And now it's like, pull that down. He was this, he was that. It's like, where are we going with this idea? Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't look like the same country I kind of grew up in. But I don't know, you know, if that's what kind of like that, if that's what they think is the right way forward, then I guess we'll have to learn from the mistakes. Do you know what I'm saying?
You know, we have such a short path. Look at England, man. You guys go on forever. You can't, you know, you can't wipe out all that. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff that happened back in the day.
Exactly. But again, you see, the thing is, like, if you start saying, right, we're not teaching Winston Churchill anymore because he was a character. He was not the greatest. He had some dark sides to him. There's no two ways about it. Like we, you know, before it was cool to say anything about Churchill, we knew what was going on with Churchill. It's like, you know, if you were in certain circles, we talked about that. Do you know what I'm saying? But I never, even though I knew at the age of 16, 17, that Churchill was a bit of a tyrant, no two ways about it. But he got this country through a very, very tricky period of time.
Yeah, and I think
that, you know, he should be remembered for the things that he did. And he should be sort of questioned for the things that he didn't. But to silence and to say we're not going to talk about Churchill is it's just it's
ridiculous.
It's a bit juvenile for me. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, again, you've got to kind of own your past. And the British kind of, you know, British history is checkered, man. There's no two ways about it.
That's right.
You know, however, you know, we learn. We go, whoa, that was interesting. Do you know what I'm saying?
You got to learn from the past. I want to talk about some songs, man, that I got really excited about. First of all, Diamonds in the Shadows, and you got a video out there. That's definitely one of my favorite tracks. Can you talk a little bit about that tune?
Diamonds in the Shadows. So that was really just a mantra, an affirmation of a tune where I just felt that it was, you know, it was a good mantra. We are diamonds in the shadows, trying to find our way back home.
Right.
You know, it's really just for the lost tribes that we're all a bit lost, aren't we? Do you know what I'm saying? And we're all looking for our tribes. And we go, we meet somebody and we're like, oh my God, you think like I do. Quick, come in, you know, cause it's kind of like, you know, it's like tribes. It's like, wow, you're part of my tip. You kind of get where I'm at. Like, you know, we formulate these kind of tribes. We've all, you know, human beings are tribal by nature. You can't deny that. We like what we like, and we like what is kind of like us. You get what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's, you know, you'll be attracted to people that are on your tip. You know, you're not going to be hanging out with somebody that's going to be like completely dire position to you, because you'll be going, that doesn't feel right for me, so I'm not going to be around that tip. Do you get what I'm saying?
I agree. So I agree.
That's what it is. It's like, you know, we can become more enlightened and actually open our kind of visions a little bit, but that's not our natural tip, because that's not how we came out. Survival happened because we were all going, yeah, man, like, right, I'm on your tip, that's cool, yeah, I'll get that. I'll watch that, I'll do that, I'll make sure that's happening. That's how we came together. We worked together as a unit. Do you know what I'm saying? So Diamonds in the Shadows really is about the lost tribes coming back together and recognizing that we're all diamonds. And we that's the core of it, I think, is actually saying, look, we're all diamonds, we're all on this plane together. We might be opposed to each other, but we've all got kind of something that drives us forward in this game called life. And that should be the unifying thing for us all to go.
Sure.
I don't care if you're a Democrat. I don't care if you're a Republican. I don't care if you're a Muslim. I don't care if you're a Jewish kind of practice. I don't care if you're Catholic. I don't care if you're Protestant. It's where you're at as a human being that's important to me.
Yeah. Do you get what I'm saying? We're all connected.
I want to hear your opposing view. So if you are coming from the left, I want to hear those ideas.
Yeah.
If you're coming from the right, I'm going to be open to listening to what what can I hear in your game plan that we can find that ground together? Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying? So let's not go, oh, because they're from the Republican Party, we can't listen to them. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And other people go, oh, they're Democrats, I can't listen to them. We've got to try and find that centrifugal kind of thing that we go, great idea, let's have that one. Great idea, let's have that one. Little by little, bipartisan, get rid, let's get some proper movement going forward. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's the only way we're going to kind of move this game on.
Yeah,
so Diamonds is really about that. It's about us all coming together. There is one right.
Some other tracks I love, Back from the Brink, which has got a kind of a reggae feel to it.
Yeah. That was written about a sort of toxic kind of relationship. You know, those ones that go slightly bad. And it was based on a girl that I knew who was, she was just a very wild cat. And I thought I was wild. But this girl was like, she was she was next level wild, you know what I mean? And she put me through my paces a little bit, you know what I mean? So it's kind of based on her and sort of like kind of waking up going, I just remember sort of saying to her, listen, if we carry on like this, we'll be dead in 6 months, do you know what I'm saying? Because it was one of those kind of waking up, drinking vodka at sort of, you know, 11 in the morning.
And oh, she man.
Was, yeah, you know what I mean? And it just was getting disruptive and negative, and I knew I couldn't do it. And she was younger than me. She was like 10 years younger than me. So she's like all go. And you know, like, you're slightly kind of going, somehow like I was going, this isn't good, dude. And like before I'd be like, God, let's go, you know, be gout for like days and days and days. And when I was kind of like almost kind of reminded of where I was, you know what I'm saying, by this girl who was just wild. Look, when I say wild, she had there was a lot of internal issues going on there. That's why she was kind of burning that candle real hard, because she was numbing pain. And I was trying to say to her at the time, I was like, listen, we should clean up our act and actually, you know, try and work out what's going on here, because otherwise, you know what I'm saying, we're just a train about to hit a wall here. And she didn't want to do it, man. Do you know what I'm saying? And I kind of woke up kind of one day just said, look, ultimatum, man, it's either kind of like we move on in a positive direction or I've got to leave. And she was like, see you then. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it was just really kind of hard. And I had to sort of leave her, but I had to walk away from a very beautiful girl who was just hell bent on drinking herself into the ground.
She's turning you into Keith Moon, I think.
She was Keith Moon. I was I thought I was Keith Moon. Do you know what I'm saying? I was actually sort of like Keith Sensible. I was kind of the one that was going, come on, babe, this is not gonna end nicely. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
and as I say, it was a really weird thing, because again, I'd always been pretty kind of like, you know, we'd be out drinking 7 days a week, do you know what I'm saying? And partying, like not coming home, not coming back for days, you know. But again, when you start getting a little bit kind of like more mature, you suddenly realize that behavior isn't really going to go down that well. That's why sort of most kind of dudes now, if you look at most rock stars, they're not really doing the Keith Moon thing.
Not anymore. It's over.
They're in bed by 10, do you know what I mean? Up doing their yoga sort of like in the morning, do you know what I mean? And I'm not going to lie, man, I'm like that. I'm not in bed by 10, but I'm definitely like, I'm not caning the drugs and the alcohol anymore. In fact, I don't even drink and I don't take drugs. You know what I'm saying? But again, you know, you learn these things as you go along that, you know, drugs are just an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an illusion. You're just numbing pain. That's all you're doing. You're numbing pain. And if you don't get to the core of what that pain is, you'll go to the grave with it. And if you're happy to do that and you don't want to do anything about it, then crack on. You know what I'm saying? But if you kind of wake up and, you know, those moments when you are sober and you feel very uncomfortable with yourself, that's the key, that it's time to do a little work. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
do a little work. Have a little look in there and see what's going on, because there's probably some trauma in there that just needs dealing with.
The main thing is you got mature enough to stop. There's so many people that don't stop and they end up dead, which is a Very sad.
I thank my time in Guatemala for that. Do you know what I mean? Took it to its final level in Guatemala in a jungle in Panacachao. That was it for me. I was like, dude, this is way too good. I got to get out of here. Do you know what I mean? It was paradise. But no, it was, things can, they either kill or cure you, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, if you read Road Tales, there's a big chapter in there about me and Guatemala having some pretty mad experiences with some pretty heavy stuff. So yeah, it's kind of in there. But again, it's not really about me per se. There's 15 different kind of stories with different characters who all had life-changing experiences. And it just so happened I was in different countries when I met these people. And I just decided, well, it'd be amazing to write a book about them. Do you know what I'm saying? So that's really about kind of like, you know, a maverick cat that I met I call him Don Juan, who was very kind of, it's questioning kind of altruism, like kind of why did some certain people step out of their nuclear family to support the greater community? So, you know, that's each one has got that kind of like questioning kind of like these human qualities and frailties.
About my other favorite tracks, the lights record drop or lights record drop.
That's the lights remix, the Dark Knight remix. That song
should be a James Bond soundtrack. Can you imagine that as a James Bond soundtrack for a new movie?
I can imagine that. I can totally imagine it. There's quite a few people who said that actually about certain tracks being kind of Bond-like.
Very Bond-like.
Somebody else said something about Wolverine the other day as well. Another American guy said a Wolverine should be sort of on a Bond thing. And I was like, yeah, cool, man. I mean, look, if Bond phones up and she's, you know, she's ready for the job. You know what I mean? I'm all good with that, you know? Yeah. Again, we talked about not putting content on, but you know, Lights was written about Robin Williams when he died, when he passed, and again, it was really about having someone there in those moments when you're feeling that the darkness is kind of too much to take. That I pray that there's somebody there just to switch the light on for you, and that's what Lights is about. It's a tribute to Robin Williams, and it's a tribute to anyone that actually has gone through that and not had someone there for him. So it's a kind of anti-suicide.
Great track. Yeah. I'm just going to go over a couple songs real quick that I liked. One cool thing was you had an Indian, which is a traditional dance of India, I believe. It's the beat. Is it Bhangra?
Bhangra
Stance
yeah.
Remix. I like that a lot.
Yeah,
that was very, very cool. Yeah. We talked about Haunted Dance Hall. That was another favorite of mine. They said it was an Asian underground mix, that tune.
Oh yeah, again, that was on the Hilary Duff movie. That mix,
right.
Haunted Dance Hall was on the Hilary Duff movie. ABC Films did a thing with Hilary Duff. The film was Beauty in the Briefcase, one of those kind of films. It was an ABC. I still get paid for it now, which is great. I guess they show it in Vietnam or something. You know what I mean? I get a royalty check for it, so it's all good, man. Do you know what I mean? So Haunted Dance Hall, yeah, again, it's just another one of those, you know, when you split up with someone and you go out and all these songs remind you of someone, and it's, you know, you just feel haunted by the whole scenario. You know what I mean? So just
Heart Shaped Pill, you got an official video for that. Another favorite, Rewind, sounded very, that song sounded very 90s rock to me.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, again, that was, you know, that's just about losing people too soon, you know, again, sort of, you know, wanting to rewind the clock so you can experience that over and over again, just that those times that you've had with someone. And, you know, it's the hardest thing that a human being has to go through when you lose someone you love. You know, it's the toughest gig you're
ever
in.
Very tough.
Family, mums, dads, aunts, whatever, you know. You know, you just wish you could keep, you know, like I lost my mum 10 years ago, do you know what I'm saying? And every day I sort of wake up and I think, oh, you know, there's things that remind me of her. And I just wish that sometimes I could go back and rewind that time and spend that time with her again. And it ain't, you know, it's just never going to happen, man. Do you know what I'm saying? But it's just that prayer and that wish that you can.
Yeah, I lost my mom 3 years ago. I know the feeling. Yeah.
God bless you, man. I'm sorry to hear that.
You got some really cool rockers in here. Phenomenal. You got Heavier Than Rock and Roll, which again, we got rock in there. You've got some R&B kind of tracks. Let Love Be Your Religion and Fly Tonight.
Yeah, they're pretty soulful. I want something else, you know what I'm saying? But I kind of, like you said when we started the interview, do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? I like flicking about, man. I get a little tired, you know what I'm saying? I spend a lot of time kind of working on music, so I kind of want to visit different areas, you know, and see where I can kind of take ideas to. There's many different pathways to the top of the mountain, you know what I'm saying? And I think if I stopped enjoying the challenge, I think every song is a challenge that you do to bring it home. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's the challenge. It's like once they're done, it's kind of you give them to the world. You know what I'm saying?
But exactly. Yeah.
When you're in it, it's kind of like the moment you sort of finish writing that lyric and you start and you're starting to shape it and you, I don't know, this is me talking, my working method. You know what I'm saying? The moment you finish that, or I finish that lyric, and I've worked it and I work it as a performance and then I lay it down and that's when the game starts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, right now, where are we going to go with this kind of production? Like, what are the drums going to be like? They're kind of go. Oh, they could go different there. Oh, they should build there. No, the arrangement's wrong. Do you know what I mean? No, we've got to start again. Oh, I've got to, you know, and it's like that. And then, you know, you just never know until the moment you finish that mix and you get it wherever you listen to it, in the car or whatever, and you go, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. And then you go, right, master it, get the artwork done, get it out, move on to the, do you know
good,
what I mean?
Good. I'm glad I love you feel that way.
I'm banging to, yeah. I love art, concepts of art. Like if you look at all my covers, they've all got little kind of subliminal tales. I never just bang things out for the sake of it. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like Rise Like the Sun, you know, it's kind of got that element of indigenous kind of like the sun, you know, of the Aboriginal sun flag. I've got the idea about that. The way that they live so naturally and there's such a tune and there's such an example of kind of, you know, living in tune with the planet that the Aboriginal people have. And so again, you know, Rise Like the Sun there is another affirmation. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Do you like my background, by the way?
I think it's awesome. I'm live on Facebook. I hope you don't mind. I've just got a couple.
No,
of
no problem. Cool. Very cool.
So just show people this is Ray, and that's the background. They're giving you a peace sign there. Do you know what I mean? Awesome. So yeah, I'm all about the artwork, man. I love the artwork. I love kind of, you know, creating concepts. I'm very into my visuals, as you kind of know, mm-hmm. and my storylines. So, yeah, you know, that you get a lot with me. Do you know what I'm saying? I try and put a lot of layers in there. So it's not just, oh, you listen to the track and that's it. It's kind of like, I want you to come back and go, oh, I didn't hear that. Like when you put on Sergeant Pepper's, do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you go, I've listened to that record all my life, but I'll put it on and I'll go, ooh. I didn't hear that kick drum like that before. Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Oh, I didn't hear the way John played that. Do you know what I mean? Oh, that piano is slightly different. So there's, you know, I kind of like music that does that, where you can listen to it over and over again. And Dark Side of the Moon's another one.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You listen to Dark Side of the Moon and you can just, it's such an incredible, you know, piece of music that is so mm-hmm. ambitious for the time as well. And you know, there was a period in my life where I couldn't go to sleep without having that record on. I swear to God, it was like, I couldn't sleep. It was just, I had to put it on. I had it on a cassette. It was like the full album on a cassette. You know, I had bought the album, so it wasn't like I'd ripped anybody off. I bought it about three times, I think, that record. But I had it on a cassette and I used to just hit, do you remember the Ghetto Blast? They used to call it, I don't know if that.
Oh, the Ghetto Blast. I used to sell those.
Yeah, I don't know if you're allowed to say Ghetto Blaster anymore, but you know, it was one of these with a sort of, you know, tape deck and you could plug your record player in the back of it, blah blah blah. Yeah. It was like an old Sony thing, do you know what I'm saying?
A boombox.
You know, yeah. So I'd stick my hands in and I'd just fall asleep to Dark Side, and then, you know, yeah. But there was a point in it I'd sort of edited out with the bit where the clocks go off. But that was right. The best, you know, I couldn't have that. Do you know what I'm saying? The rest of that album is just incredible, man. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel a little bit like that with Relayer from Yes, you know, The Gates of Delirium. Okay. And, you know, I can listen to that over and over again because it tells a story. It's almost like it's the story of Tolstoy, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. What, Lord of the Rings kind of thing?
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. No, War and Peace. War and Peace. It's a War and Peace.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
They actually got it from War and Peace.
Yeah. Is that Dostoevsky?
I think Russian. So. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Well, that would be an interesting album. I'll have to check that out.
Good album.
There's someone down in Florida that was actually going on at me. She's a lovely lady, actually. They run mm-hmm. a electric lady radio down in Florida. Really, mm-hmm. really cool people. And the lady down there was just going on about, you've got to listen to this Yes album. It's like, da 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 da. Do you know what I mean? So, second time now, I better go and check them out.
I had Rick Wakeman on the show not long ago. He's a funny guy.
Yeah. He's a quality cat. Did you ask him about what he thought of the Sex Pistols?
No, didn't do that.
You should have done. I always find him really interesting as soon as he starts talking about his career and then talks about punk and how punk would be. If I was you, I would have too. So what do you think about Johnny Lydon then, mate? Just to wind him up, do you know?
Yeah,
he's
quite an interview, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot of track record, hasn't he? I mean, an incredible piano player.
Speaking of piano playing, was that you on Evermore?
Yes.
That was you. That's a beautiful song, man.
Yeah. I wrote that for my mum.
That's a beautiful song.
I played that for her at her funeral.
Really?
Listen, do you want to hear the story behind Evermore?
Like, yes.
I couldn't listen to that song. Mm-hmm. I couldn't listen to that song. But my mum died in 2008. And it comes back to, you know, I was going through my kind of vault stuff because I've been doing the radio shows and this, that, and the other.
Right.
And there it was, Evermore. And I thought, I got to listen to that to see if it cuts me the way it did before. Mm-hmm. And instead of it cutting me, I just thought, you know what, that's a really beautiful song. And then me sitting on that is a bit unfair because I think other people might get something out of that. Because, you know, I'd written it just as my mum was passing and I recorded it. I had a studio because I was living with her at the time mm-hmm. and I had a studio at the top of the house. And she was in hospital at the time, but I had a string quartet come in. And we did all the strings, and it was, you know, these cats, you know what string players are like. They're like, well, have you got the dots? And I'm like, no, I haven't, but I've got a piano here and I'm going to play you the fucking thing and you're going to play it. You know what I mean? Don't give me all that bloody malarkey dot. You know what I mean? And I just played it for him, and they sort of got with a program, and they, you know, I like the arrangement on that. I like the way the strings come in at the sort of middle sections, and you know, it's not an obvious arrangement. So, but again, you know, I listened to it. I sent it down to the, you know, as a batch of tracks for Ballads of the Downtrodden. And again, I just thought, you know what, it's a shame to just not let people hear that. Because again, Ray, you've just told me that you think it's beautiful. So mm-hmm. it was worth it just to hear that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Beautiful track, man. I noticed it right away. You know, it's one of my favorite tunes.
That's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And the other beautiful song I liked was Safe in Your Arms. That's another really cool track.
Yeah. Again, yeah. So written away when you're away from people who you love. And it's, you know, I had an idea for as a soldier, again, sort of a soldier probably out in Afghan, you know what I mean? He was writing home to his girl. Just it was one of those sort of stories, really, sort of you know, missing sort of the safety of your home.
Everyone needs to go on YouTube and check out your 911 State of Mind Remembered. Yeah, yeah. Very, very, very touching.
Yeah, again, sort of, it's a beautiful, well, it's not beautiful, but I was asked again sort of by the 911 Foundation to do my kind of thoughts of where I was at the time. And it is what it is. You know, it was a crazy thing to happen, a crazy period of time. I couldn't, you know, it was just an honest thing to say how I was and where we were at the time, mm-hmm. and how it's a shame that it has to take something like that to bring us all together. You know what I'm saying? It was a shocking period of time, but yeah.
We can never forget. That's
never forget. You know, never forget. There's many theories on that situation, but
I've heard them. Yeah, I've heard them.
But you know, at the end of the day, a lot. You know, there was a big seismic shift in public consciousness, and I think it. If I'm honest with you, 9/11 it derailed the 21st century.
Yeah.
You know, we were kind of grooving along up until that point, mm-hmm. and suddenly that happened, and we've been on a fighting a rear guard ever since. It's been right. one, you know, 21st yep. century really has been one sort of testing, challenging scenario after another. You know, and it's probably one of the things I've kind of, but it's, you know, watching kind of like 9/11 happened, and then Afghan, and then Iraq happened, and mm-hmm. the disasters that was, and then the financial crashes, and people basically kind of not wanting to really face up to really what was going on. You know, if you look at Red, White, and Blue, for instance, mm-hmm. on Soul Hours, you know, those tracks, Let Love Be Your Religion, all written, you know, as a result of kind of like, why aren't people talking about this? Why are people more interested in going shopping and sort of like recognizing that, so you know, boys and girls are coming back in coffins, you know, fighting a war for what? You know, why aren't we talking about it? It just seemed very strange that no one was talking about it. So, you know, it's up to artists to try and go raise a flag for this, because it's insanity. And I think you know, so it's just been ongoing, and then obviously now we're into, you know, the crazy year that we've had. You know, and of course, you know, everyone's got a theory on it. Everyone can come up with a scenario. But again, it's, you know, another challenge of the 21st century, and where we go from here is anyone's. But you know, we're only going to get through this if we come together as a people. You know, this is the core, man. If you know, we can divide ourselves with all these different, you know, things that we say. Oh, well, I'm on this side. I'm on that side. Mm-hmm. But all the time we're doing that, we're shortchanging ourselves, mm-hmm. because we're never going to be able to face the challenges unless we are working together as a one.
I agree. You know? You know what? I think Elon Musk has the right idea. Let's get the hell out of here. let's start colonizing in Mars, you know?
You see, the thing is, if we don't learn the mistakes of what we've done here, we're only going to repeat it when you terraform somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? You know, human beings are the problem, man. You know, they are the problem. One of the things about watching sort of like the whole lockdown situation, nature is thriving.
I know.
If it didn't make human beings wake up and go, this planet doesn't need us. We mm-hmm. need it. Let's love it. Let's respect it. Like, you know, if I had this conversation in sort of like, you know, 15, 20 years ago, people just think you were some whacked out hippie just mm-hmm. talking kind of about hugging trees. Now, because of COVID, people are starting to realize actually life is very, very kind of like, one minute you're here, next minute you're not here. You have to value your moments. You can't take anything for granted. You know what I'm saying? And if we're not valuing nature, we're not valuing the platform that we live on. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Like, it's more like the planet and the challenges that we face are more important than any of your right on woke-dom kind of things that are going on. You know, that we're going to, you know, go on about this life and that life matters and this, that and the other. You know, everything matters, man. Everything matters. And the world matters. The planet that you walk on matters more than anything.
I just had a in-depth conversation with Chuck Lavelle, the legendary Chuck Lavelle, about, he's a tree farmer, you know, and he, you know, he's really into nature. And we were talking about how to stop the fires, you know, in California. And he's got a great idea. I think what they do, it's called prescribing or something like that, but they do that here in Florida.
Okay.
And it works. You actually burn an area.
Control burn.
Yeah, control burn. Yeah.
Yeah. That's been around for a long time, you know, that, you know, control. But look, we talked about the Aboriginals, man. Now, the Aboriginals didn't log their places to pieces. So there was natural breakers within that framework that a fire would hit a certain area and the natural fire breaker of that particular tree would stop it from spreading. Now we've logged everything to pieces. Those natural fire breakers aren't there anymore. Do you know what I'm saying? That's now, right. I'm not an expert, but I know I've listened to sort of Aboriginals kind of like talking, and they would do control burns because that's how they used to hunt.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? But they knew that it wouldn't spread out of control because they knew what trees where to burn. So, you know, those techniques go all the way back centuries.
Right. That's why we need to learn from history.
Exactly. That's why you don't want to start pulling things apart and going.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh?
You know, it's amazing what they did. You know, we take for granted, you know, years back and, oh, we got the phone and I can do this and I can do that. That's nothing compared to thousands of years ago. Look how they wrote the Bible back in the day with handwritten, but beautiful. Exactly. You know, I mean, that's, you can't do that. You can't do that today. Nobody's got the patience to do that today.
Yeah, who could write the Bible today? God knows. Only God can get inspire us to do that. Do you know what I'm saying? But yeah, you know what? I think that, you know, there's lots of kind of things that have happened. Like for instance, you know, the way that people used to build buildings, you know, if you look at kind of King Solomon's temple, the way that's set up in terms of, you know, they built structures that aligned with the planets, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
They could track the planets. They could particularly always had a view on Venus, because wherever Venus was tracking, that's how they would navigate. Or that's how, that when they knew sort of Venus was in a certain part of the sky, you know, that would be a time to plant, or do you know what I'm saying? So, you know, a lot of those buildings basically were built for that. They were built as like Stonehenge. They were kind of like there to track the pyramids.
The pyramids.
The pyramids were done. You know, you've got the same thing that goes down, you know, you've got things like when you go down to sort of Mexico, southern Mexico, Mexico City, down to Guatemala, all the way down where the Mayan stuff happens. Mm-hmm. You've got a similar thing going on where you know, they knew about those structures. They knew how to set them up in terms of being able to, you know, they worked out astrology, do you know what I'm saying? And movements of the planets. So, you know, they could tell the story of life by just literally looking up and having these planets to basically be able to work out measurements with. So,
it's amazing.
The ancients were way ahead of the game.
And oh, yeah.
Somewhere along. Look, I tell you what happened, man. Organized religion came along and it just buggered everything. Because, like, you know, when people basically sort of like have access to knowledge, that makes them a little dangerous. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of religion came along. I mean, particularly when you look at the Romans, you know, the Romans basically thought, you know, look, we can't keep control with a sword, but we can keep control with religion. So let's get out of this war game and let's get into sort of organized religion, because that way we can control through fear. So if you don't do as you're told, you're going to go to hell. And it was genius, because it takes the Bible, beautiful things out of the Bible, but it actually created a control mechanism that people weren't allowed to, you know, people like Galileo were looking up and going, you know, but this is circular. Things are moving around us. Like, you know, and the church is going, no, you know, let's burn all the witches because they were all the healers. So let's just, you know what I'm saying? So
unbelievable.
Look at what happened to Alexandria, you know, the eighth wonder of the world, where the library, where all the Egyptian scrolls and papyrus, you know, all the knowledge was in that, you know, and they trashed it. Do you know what I'm saying? So why do we have no connection to the past? Is because it's been systematically destroyed for a reason.
I agree.
To stop you becoming kind of like, you know, a power within yourself. But the sad thing is, though, if we were all, you know, advanced, because actually, if you think about it, we as human beings should be so much more advanced than we are. Mm-hmm. We're still living in our primitive minds.
I agree.
we're still in survival mode, most of us, you know what I'm saying? Who would cut, you know, let's, you know, we'd stab, you know, people would kill you for a whatever, you know, for a set of Nikes or whatever, do you know what I'm saying? Not that I ever wear Nikes, but I'm more of an Adidas kind of guy, but, you know, we're in this primitive survival mechanism of like, gotta get ahead, gotta say, you've got that, I want that. You know, that's, we haven't evolved. If we've gone beyond that and we're like, actually, you know what? We can hunt together, man, and we can share that whatever. And I don't need all that, but I can give you a little bit, man. And we can share that one together. And when you've got something, we can work together as a unit. That's the power. But when we're all separated, kind of going, no, I'm over here with my little bit, and you ain't having it. And I'm going to build a fortress and a wall. And saying? You know, little by little, we become mistrusting of each other and mistrusting of ideas. And then someone comes up with an idea to go, right, we're doing this now. And everyone's got to fall into this new kind of religion of, you know, smash the past up and don't ask questions and fall in. And if you dare say anything, you're cancelled. You know what I mean? It's happening again.
Then we turn into sheep or rats.
I think, you know... Listen, man, you know, unless you're kind of asking questions, then you are going to be easily herded. That's the lowdown. But, you know, it's a shame. You know, it's the tragic shame of, like, whether it ever changes in our lifetime, who knows. But things could be so much better if we would just evolve as a species and just kind of, like, you know, start recognizing what is really important. And it's not material, it's spiritual.
Yeah. It is spiritual.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's, I'm not just talking about, you know, going to church and praying on a Sunday or whatever, or getting down on your hands and knees and whatever you do. I'm talking about living it and feeling it and breathing it. So it becomes a thing, you know, it's not a dogma. It's a thing. It's a thing where I recognize your greatness and you can recognize whatever I do that might be kind of inspiring. And we work together and we build a platform of, you know, based on mutual respect.
You know, two examples of groups or people in history that got, you know, stamped out and would have made a big difference today. One is Nikola Tesla. And the other is the American Indian. We could learn so much from the American Indian, and they just, you know, destroyed them. You know,
yeah, again, that's that European concept of like crush and destroy and control. I mean, again, you know, you look at it's devastating to see what happened to the native Red Indians. It's devastating that people didn't want to learn from them. And I think, you know, the classic thing when you sort of look into sort of like, you know, first kind of connections with native Red Indians and European tribes, if you like, coming through, was that they couldn't understand that you felt that you owned the earth or you owned a part of the ground. Do you know what I mean? They were like, but no one, just like you don't own the sky, you don't own the ground, you know what I'm saying? And it was a very tricky, it was just a very sort of odd concept to them that they couldn't really get their heads around. It was like, you know, they walk like the Buddhists almost when you think about it. Do you know what I mean? They walk very lightly. They realize that no one's here forever. And that, you know, we should walk very, very lightly and give more than we take. That's where they were at. They didn't slaughter all the kind of the bison. Do you know what I'm saying? They knew that that was their food source, so they were respectful of it. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, look at the destruction of you just look at the bison mountains. So they were paying people to kill bisons for not even to eat, to starve the Indians out. You know, it's that kind of weird thinking where you kind of go,
it is.
But if we don't talk about it, if we go, oh, because it happened in the past and it's white European history, we shouldn't talk about it. We don't know. We don't learn. We go, wow, that was a really weird thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We can learn a lot from the Buddhists too.
Oh, you know, you know, again, if you look at the ancients, you know, you study sort of the ancient kind of civilizations, Red Indians, the Buddhists, you know, the Aboriginals, won't go too far wrong because they were on their game. Technology is a beautiful thing, but they didn't really need it. They were able to kind of sustain themselves through knowing how to work with the planet. They were in tune, you know, and that's what we're kind of not, you know, I'm not, you know, I can't go out there as, you know, out there in the pitch black and start, you know, surviving. You know, I'm literally going to, as soon as I get out of the door, I'm going to go, oh, it's a bit cold, isn't it? Ooh, I've got to get a jacket.
I know. We're all spoiled.
We're all a bit soft, you know what I mean? Oh, I can't go out without my guitar. But these guys could. They were very, very in tune. But so I think, you know, we've got to find a balance between the comforts that we've got.
I agree.
But also, you know, but how do we give back? That's my core question. How do we give back? How do we stop taking? You know.
Dar, here's your final question. I ask this question to everybody. I get some very interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, I think it'd have to be John Lennon and George Harrison, probably. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I know a lot of people who know me know that John's always been a bit of a, you know, a thing and a person and an energy that, you know, was always kind of like inspiring in many different ways. So I think just hanging out with John and George would be really cool. But again, going back to that night that Jimmy died, you know, there's many, many kind of cool people that I could collaborate with and work out some interesting things, you know, like imagine working with Jimmy would be amazing. You know what I'm saying? You know, even to imagine just producing Jimi Hendrix would just be incredible, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? And just seeing that incredible energy in front of you would just be mind-blowing, you know? And just seeing where his vision was and seeing if you could add in whatever you could add in. Or even sometimes, you know, what it's good to just not... to just let things flow. I think that, you know, rather than sort of try and control things. So yeah, that would be even any of those cats from sort of like that period of time for me would just be, you know, would be pretty cool. Was the question about sort of performing together or was it just, you know, where would you?
Either one, performing, collaborating, anything like that.
Yeah, I think more collaboration, kind of like, you know, digging it, you know, into, I don't know, a lot of studios in Los Angeles are still kind of rocking, but you know, equally sort of over here, sort of Abbey Road still kind of going. So yeah, I'd just probably pull a few of those cats into Abbey Road and see what we came up with. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, that would be a pretty, pretty cool vibe.
Just being in Abbey Road Studios is enough.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you know, luckily Abbey Road's still there.
Yeah.
You know, it's been clever in terms of how it's kind of kept operating and, you know, and we're lucky that that's still there that we can talk about because a lot of those kind of amazing like Capitol Studios I think in Los Angeles is not there now, is it? It's gone.
I'm not sure. I thought the building was still there. No.
Yeah, but I think they turned it into. I think they sold it and they turned Did it they? Into. Is it condos? Do they have
Could
condos?
Be. I wouldn't be surprised.
I heard that they. Yeah, EMI kind of went a little bit tricky and sold out, and then they sold a lot of the real estate, particularly and So a lot of the studios, obviously, because it's become a lot cheaper to basically record at your own. Like I was saying, down at Manfred Mann Studio, that was like £2,000 a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably, that was expensive. In 1992. Let's call it $3,000 US a day just to be in those studios. So, you know, you have to have a pretty big budget to be able to pull that off. That's if you're true. In there for like 2 months making a record, you're going to be that's a bill. You know what I mean? And that in some ways kind of technology is amazing because it means that everyone can have an Abbey Road now, you know, and Abbey Road is amazing. They produce a lot of plugins. So you can create that. I mean, I actually worked on the desk that they did Peppers on.
Really?
Yeah. I was out in Sydney and we worked at 301 Studios Mastering Suite. And they had a part of the original desk from Abbey Road. EMI 301 out there in Sydney, and obviously at the time they were chucking stuff out to replace it with new stuff. Yeah. And I think for some reason, sort of like someone out in Australia said, "We'll have it." And so it's sitting out there, and probably now still kind of sitting out part of the board that they used to mix peppers on. So I've actually worked on that.
Very cool. On that desk. I think the original piano is still there at Abbey Road. So
We'd have to talk to Rick Wakeman because I'm sure he's in and out of that.
Yeah, he has. Dar, you got anything else for me? New music coming out? Are you definitely going to tour after the pandemic is over with, or what's going to happen next?
Yeah, I mean, look, at the moment I've got this, this Ballads for the Downtrodden that I've been promoting. There's these two new kind of compilation albums, Majestic Retrospectors 1 and 2 coming through. There's a new album, literally. I've had to rebuild the studio that I'm sitting in at the moment because it kind of needed a... You know what? When you're working, like the rest of the house was all done, do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But this, because it was my studio and I was working on project after project, I kept saying, no, I can't do it, do you know what I'm saying? And then eventually it was starting to kind of show that things were kind of needing to sort of be reworked. And then once you get into it, you unveil a whole smorgasbord of issues. It's taken me 7 days to rebuild the floors and the walls and the decorate it, this, that, and the other. And so, yeah, I've got an album which is written. There's quite a few songs that will go on that. So that's once I've got this basically wired up, I'll be back into sort of producing up and getting it, mixed. I'll mix it somewhere else. But so there's some great new songs. And again, you talk about lots of different genres. There's lots of different vibes on that record. I think it's going to be interesting. Hopefully be out by sort of late summer. In between that, we've got another EP just about to come out as well called Kings and Serfs. And there's some really cool artwork, which is I've just had come through from the Cat in Indonesia. And so that's out. And there's a really cool video coming alongside that called Londinium. And it's the history of this family that go back through to the Roman ages. And this guy has made this really cool video for it, which it just tells the story of this family from the sort of 1800s to the present of how London kind of formulated. So that's coming forward. I've just seen the first bit of that, and it's really amazing because he's got all this old footage and it looks like Buster Keaton sort of almost footage, do you know what I mean? It's like cool kind of flickery old vibes, do you know what I mean? And I think you're gonna love it because
I'm looking forward to that.
I saw it last night and I was just sitting there, like I'd had a full day finishing off here and this came in and he said, oh, can you check this first kind of brush of it? And I was like, and I checked it and I was like, oh my god, this is so cool, man, do you know what I mean? Really, there's a few things he needs to change just in terms of references. So he's just working on that. And so that'll be out, another EP. There's great artwork on that as well. We've taken an idea of a First World War magazine that was being sold. And so that it's got a soldier and a nurse, and Kings and Serfs basically is a reference to saying that we're always having to serve these the elite, shall we say. And you make of it what you want to make of it, and and so that'll be going out hopefully where are we now, it's March, isn't it? Jesus. So April I'd say it'll be out. I'll get the film over to you as soon as I've got it, I promise. You'll get it first. And so, yeah, so that's happening. So lots of things. And you know what? Things happen in between that. So I've got, like John Lennon said, life happens when you're busy making plans. You know what I'm saying? So I just kind of keep my kind of vision open. I'm hoping to write a new book as well. So I've got a few ideas for a couple of new books to sort of to write as well. So I'll hopefully get some time to start hitting the keys. You know what I mean? And start typing out.
Dar, we're gonna follow your career, man, and we're gonna get you on the show in the future as many times as we can. Okay,
you know what, man,
you're a great talent. You are an awesome talent, man. We all believe in you. So, and I think great things are gonna happen to you. I really do.
Well, you know what, I'm all about the team. I'm all about the team and keeping people close who, who are a part of that team and sharing things and inspiring. And you inspire me, man, with some of the vibes that you do and what you do and what you produce on that station is just incredible. I'm here for you guys. You know what I'm saying? To support you as much as I can. So
we appreciate that.
I'm producing a radio show for your station as well, which I'm really proud about. Right. And so that's going well. I've got the next I've done 6 volumes so far, 6 shows, which is all stuff on the label, man.
Fantastic.
So I've got the next show to do, and then eventually I'll start opening it out to other people, other artists, and we'll take it from there. So the radio show's doing real cool, and it's doing, I'm, as I say, proud to have it on your station.
Awesome, man. Thanks for being with us today. I really, really appreciate it. I want to mention real quick, The Night That Jimmy Died is available on Kindle. And you can get that at Amazon Books. And it's under Dara J. Brady, correct?
Yeah, Dara J. Brady.
Dara J. Brady.
Yeah, and you also, go ahead. It's hard copy as well, I think, on that as well. Yeah. I think there's a hard copy lurking about if you like flipping through pages, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's out. Just keep inspiring. Keep bringing people together. Keep talking, man. That's what it's about. Keep sharing ideas.
I want to mention Road Tales as well on Kindle edition, also available at Amazon.com. For more information about Dara or Dara, you can visit Facebook, www.facebook.com/Kush Adeep. Is that right?
Kush Adeep? Yeah, that's my record label, Kush Adeep.
Kush Adeep. www.instagram.com/Dara Brady. Reverb Nation. www.reverbnation.com/KushAdeep Music and Twitter, www.twitter.com/KushAdeep as well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if you get into trouble, just either Google my name or KushAdeep and all that gear come up, man. You know what I'm saying? If you go on YouTube and you want to see some videos, man, just put in Dara, D-A-R-A, and all that stuff will come up and you can get into it. And hopefully you know, some of your listeners will enjoy it as much as I've enjoyed sort of making those records. You know what I'm saying?
Special thanks to Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. And big thanks to Doug for introducing me to Dara. That was awesome.
Oh, hell, the Doug, man.
and everybody buy my book. Yeah. If they can see it up there. Nope. You can't see it.
I can't see it at the moment, but just tell me what it is, man.
Okay. It's the Rockstar Chronicles, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us Free. It's series one. It's got over 45 interviews.
Wow.
From the greatest legends, you know, we'll get you in there, one of the series.
That's awesome. So just give me that title one more time.
It's the, if you want, I can email it to you.
Yeah.
I'll email you the information.
And it's called Rock and Roll Chronicles.
The Rockstar Chronicles by Ray Sasho.
So the Rockstar Chronicles by Ray Sasho. Go get it. It's a read. It's the business. It's going to take you on a journey, and it's rock and roll history in the making.
Amazon.com or bookbaby.com. Available now.
Get out there and score a copy because we want to support people that do great things.
Thank you, Dar. I appreciate it, man. I'm going to order your books tonight.
Thank you so much. You know, I'm really looking forward to kind of coming out and meeting you guys soon.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
definitely.
When this is all kind of like chilled and we can come over and we can play some shows and just have some fun, kick back, play some music together, you know?
Well, if you ever need an MC for a show, look me up.
Dude, you're my first port of call.
All right, man.
God bless you, man. God bless all the listeners.
Bless you too, man. You're a great person. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. And just keep spreading the love.
We will. We will. Thanks, Dar. Bye-bye.
Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends. Every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.